All right, this is Gary Parrish again from CBSSports.com again, and let me welcome you to the IOM College Basketball Podcast again, which is now brought to you by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create your own professional website or online portfolio. For a free trial, 10% off, go to squarespace.com/CBSSports and use the offer code FUN. That's FUN at squarespace.com/CBSSports. All right, let's get into it. The Final Four is now set. It's Sunday night. It is, let's put a number on it, 10:45 Eastern as I speak. We got Connecticut, Florida set up for Saturday in the early game. Wisconsin, Kentucky set up for the late game. Here to help me talk about it is Jeff Brazillo and Matt Norlander. Pleasant Sunday night to you guys.
Hello, hello. Pleasant to you, GP.
Yeah, it's good to be here. It's good to talk to you again.
It's good to be here.
Dude, it's generally like Borzell and I were hanging in NYC being buds, but we have barely talked to you in the past week. It's because it's been so crazy. So it's great to hear your voice. Yeah,
it's good to have a voice. It's been I have learned a valuable lesson.
It's good to know you're alive.
I've learned a valuable lesson over the past week, and that lesson is this: hosting a regional is not simple. It's a very difficult thing to do because you feel obligated, or at least I feel obligated. Perhaps not everybody feels this way, but I felt obligated to have all of these writers, most of whom are friends, in my hometown, that I felt like I had to show them a good time, right, and take them out and make sure they enjoyed my city, my home of Memphis, Tennessee, as much as I enjoy my city and home of Memphis. And the whole thing got out of hand. The whole thing got completely out of hand. And so I was so glad when I left the arena on Saturday night after watching Florida handle Dayton by 10 points to advance to the fourth Final Four of Billy Donovan's tenure. I was so glad to be able to say goodbye to everybody and wish them well on their flights home. I needed people to get out of here. It has taken a toll on my body. It has taken a toll on my relationship.
Family.
It is taking a toll on everything. So I'm just now recovering. But how was New York? You guys have a good time?
It wasn't bad. It was good. It was first of all, I want regional finals and regional semifinals in Madison Square Garden every year. Yes. It was awesome. It was the best environment I've been in for an NCAA tournament game in the 4 years I've been working at CBS.
Yeah, it was pretty good. I think I have to agree with Borzello in that it was Virginia's fans blew
they travel,
me away.
Man, yeah,
travel well. I know it's one of the richest, you know, alumni bases, considering Virginia and its law school and getting people into New York. But the volume in which Virginia outnumbered Michigan State and Iowa State, which was decent. I mean, it was really UVA versus UConn there on Friday night, but in MSG, both, you know, Friday and here today on Sunday, it was awesome in a lot of ways. It bettered even some of the best Big East tournament games I've seen, and even as a writer or just going to experience Big East games for the better part of the past decade, I've seen some pretty amazing experiences. So I ended up writing about
there was good though, like it was.
Oh, it was huge, but I wrote about this Sunday night. We know the sites for the tournament next year. But then later this year, we're going to know basically 2016, 2017, 2018, where the tournament's going to be played in the first and second weekend. And in my opinion, while UConn was a great natural draw, no matter who is there, the city lures people in. And because it'll always be an East regional, you're going to have
huge, yeah,
a Syracuse, a UNC, a Duke, a UConn. Like, there is always going to be at least one team that's kind of, you know, will be the flagship, if you will. But even still, like, people are always going to come in. So it was Borzell and I just we had a blast. It was really fantastic to see that, and I would assume the NCAA won't allow itself to go so long again. It had been 53 years since the tournament had been in the Garden.
Y'all didn't have as much fun as I had.
Oh, I know we didn't have.
I saw you tweet that you lost a bunch of credit cards. So.
I found them.
There you go.
Yeah, I found them. They were right where I dropped them at. It was just, they were right where I dropped them.
Are you willing to reveal at what time you actually stepped through your front door, whatever day that was?
Well, I had a hotel downtown. Yeah, for the regional, because I think I might have lied to myself. I do this all the time. I rationalize things. And so my thinking going in was, listen, I cannot be coming home from a round of 64, round of 32 in St. Louis, diving into a regional and then getting ready to go to the Final Four, you know, late nights, driving back and forth. You know, I live 25 minutes outside of downtown Memphis, driving back and forth home with a three-month-old baby, like getting up every morning, you know, middle of the night with the baby, and like it just like it'll wear me out completely. So like in the spirit of being productive, I need to like treat this like I'm at a regional, like I'm on the road where I can really focus on work 24 hours a day. And then what it actually amounted to is I ended up entertaining all of the writers. Pat Forty was in town from Yahoo, of course. Eamon Brennan from ESPN. We had a Pete Thamel from SI. And so I did not step back in my front door on, I guess it would be Saturday morning. After a Friday night out, we watched games together. We all watched games together downtown. And then we just started popping around a little bit. But I think oh God, should I say this? Of course,
say it. Say it.
5:45.
There you go, kid.
5:45. Hey,
there you go, kid.
Hey. But let's just make it clear. I wasn't alone. Like all
as you say with your hoarse voice, and
all the other writers were out too. Like it wasn't like just me by myself till 5. It was everybody was getting after it in a pretty remarkable way. We witnessed a fight on the trolley tracks. Witnessed one person throw up. The whole. Yeah. I mean, listen. I hope this is all. I hope is that folks left Memphis after the South Regional saying, "My God, that was a great time. I don't know that I need to come back anytime soon because my head hurts." But we had it. But Paris showed us a great time. That's all I was after. And I think I lived up to my responsibilities in that regard. And maybe didn't quite meet them in other places.
So now we're just going to cruise control Final Four.
You know what? I thought about, like, by the time we get to Dallas, I'll feel fine.
Yeah,
right?
It'll be Norlander. Here's the keys.
Right, yeah. By the time we get to Dallas, I'll be fine. But, like, there was a moment today where I'm, like, watching games, and I'm like, I'm done. I'm not doing anything at the Final Four. I know, like, it's just me lying to myself again. It's really all I do, wake up every day and just lie to myself. So we're going to the Final Four. We got Connecticut, Florida, Kentucky, Wisconsin. The obvious storyline there is that we are, and if you've seen the opening lines, then you know this is true. We are on path for an all-SEC national championship game. If the favorites win on Saturday, on Monday night, we will watch Florida and Kentucky play for the fourth time. This year. Florida, of course, has won every one of those games. Are you surprised we've ended up here? I don't guess anybody should be surprised Florida's in the Final Four, and given that Kentucky was the preseason number one team, it shouldn't be shocking, but I've seen a lot of brackets. I didn't see any that had Connecticut, Florida, Kentucky, Wisconsin coming out.
I think that looking back, looking at it from afar, you're shocked at the teams that made it, but if you look at each game that each team played, all three Kentucky games, all four Kentucky games, all four UConn games, it's not shocking to see them win all those games. I mean, Kentucky was, you know, talent-wise and on paper, they were evenly matched in all their games. UConn was evenly matched in pretty much all their games. Maybe, you know, today they were, I think, 5-6 point underdogs. But, like, looking at that game, you didn't look at it and say, UConn can't win this game. It's shocking that they won this game. So I think when you look at it big picture, it's surprising, but I think when you look at it, when you really like narrow it down, I don't think it's that shocking that each of those teams won those games.
I agree with that. It is funny. I think we talked about this in the preseason, guys, how, you know, the preseason polls can often signal a lot of stuff that'll come true at the end of the year. And that Kentucky gets back as an 8 seed, I think, is pretty interesting. This, in terms of like the seeding, I mean, it's now the fifth straight year that we've only had, we've had less than two number one seeds. 2 years, or in 2011, we didn't have any number one seeds. And that was when UConn ended up winning. UConn getting there, man. Like, it's weird. Like, I'm very surprised that team did it. But then you tell me who's the most valuable player to any team in the country, and it would have been McDermott, maybe. But I still think Creighton would have been better without McDermott than than UConn would have been without Shabazz. I think he is the most vital player to any team. And so in that scope, I guess it's not tremendously surprising. You know, they got a Villanova team they matched up well against, and Iowa State wasn't fully healthy. And Michigan State, I mean, they just played great defense. And Michigan State was oddly just determined to shoot a lot of threes. I like this Final Four a lot. I'm interested in kind of every team that's going. GP, what are your thoughts?
I like it a lot, too. And Connecticut is the one that is surprising me, right? I mean, not only because they're a 7 seed, although that plays into it. I mean, this is a team that finished 3 games back of Louisville and Cincinnati in the American standings. This is a team that got swept by SMU, that lost by 33 3 weeks ago to Louisville. All of the things you typically look for that you would apply to a Final Four team, it's not really there, except for they got a great player. You know, they got one guy who can.
Yeah, the best player in the tournament. Yeah.
I mean, he has been the best player in the tournament. I mean, they've got one guy, and it's funny. Like I think because he's hit big shots.
Sound familiar, by the way.
I know, right? I mean, that's what's funny is that
there's gonna be 1,000 stories written about.
I know,
him this week,
right? I
the,
mean, like
the comparison,
right? And it's not like this out of nowhere compared. Like people have been talking about it. I just assumed that it couldn't happen again. You know, like
right?
I would always say like Shabazz is great, but he's not Kemba. You know, and I still think that's true, but damn, he's a lot closer than I thought because he's doing it. You know, I mean, he's doing it. He's got him in the Final Four. You know, it's an 8-loss team, a team that went 12-6 in the American Athletic Conference, and he's got them, you know, in the Final Four. And no, they're not favored to beat Florida, but can they? Hell, they've already done it once, right? I mean, they, you know, so at this point, listen, I know who I'll pick to win the national championship, and I think you guys will pick. I don't, and it won't be Connecticut, but like, there's nothing crazy about Connecticut doing this, and. But that is the one that's surprising to me. Kentucky, like if they ever, like we've been saying for all year long, like if it ever flipped, then they could be physically, like I actually wrote a column. The headline says they can be physically overwhelming. Like this is why they're a scary matchup in March, because they can physically overwhelm you. And that's what they're doing to teams right now, besides making shots in an uncharacteristic way. But, I think it didn't take a big imagination to see Kentucky doing this. Although I'm not going to use revisionist history, I didn't think they'd flip the switch. I thought it got too late, that they weren't going to be able to do it. You know, clearly I was wrong. But you know, you look at that roster and the idea that roster is in the Final Four shouldn't surprise anybody. Wisconsin, like they had a bad stretch, you know, January, you know, early February. But that was always a good basketball team. Florida's Florida. Connecticut, though. I mean, the idea that this is the same team that got run off the court by Louisville a few weeks ago is now here is pretty remarkable. And it comes down to that defense, absolutely, but also because they've got, you know, really one of the nice stars of the sport, and a guy who, you know, if it weren't for McDermott, would be stacking National Player of the Year honors at this
totally.
Point, probably.
Borzella, I mean, go ahead. You talk about you had written on this from the Garden tonight in terms of just the overall picture of what UConn did.
Well, yeah, I mean, if you look at them a year and a half ago, we were all kind of questioning where was UConn's program headed. You know, Calhoun had stepped down. Ollie was an interim. They didn't even trust him with a permanent job. You know, they were on NCAA probation, they're changing conferences, and, you know, just the kind of the future didn't look like it was going to be a vintage, you know, next few years of UConn basketball. And then, you know, Kevin Ollie comes in and the players buy in, and then they were pretty good last year, but nobody cared about them because they weren't eligible for the tournament. And now he's got them playing, and he's got them in the Final Four, and Napier has developed into one of the best players in the country, and Ollie is... You know, I think he's done a terrific job with his team. It's just crazy how much has changed in the past 18 months in terms of the program. And like you saw, you know, at the game tonight, there was all the former UConn legends were there. Rip Hamilton, yeah. Khalid El-Amin, you know, Okafor, Ben Gordon, you know, down the line. You know, I think that shows how much, you know, I guess keeping that kind of continuity going by going from Calhoun to Ollie with all the former UConn guys on staff. I just think that continuity, that like, you know, that family type atmosphere, I think that really helped with the transition.
Go ahead.
It is funny that like once upon a time they were unsure of whether Kevin Ollie should get
totally unsure. Yeah. Like, and I got a horde of buddies when he got the job that are UConn fans because this is where I live, who absolutely hated the hire.
Oh wow. I wrote about this many, many times. I was like, listen, how would I know if Kevin Ollie is going to be great? Like, how would anybody know? Except that people I knew and respected, had a really high opinion of him. And I guess I was just fundamentally against leaving him sort of hanging there. Like commit to him. And if it doesn't work, then buy him out and move on. But commit to him. Like, to have, I think it's in this state of college basketball, to have your coach with an uncertain future just never made sense to me. So I consistently said they should commit to him long term, but not necessarily because I thought he was this, although I thought he could be, because people I respected had a high opinion of him, but because I just thought you should commit to him. And the idea that that university was hesitant on some level to do it seems a little silly. Now, second year head coach in the Final Four.
Bonkers. Okay. Exactly. Second year, first year of tournament eligibility. They couldn't go last year because of the APR sanctions. That's wild. He's the sixth coach ever to make a Final Four in his first tournament appearance, going back to 79 when they started seeding teams. It's totally crazy. And what was bizarre to me, and I promise we will not get on a Twitter people are weird thing again, because I know we talk about that to a fault, but I tweeted out that it took Calhoun 27 years to get to a Final Four the first time, and Ollie did it in his second season and first in tournament eligibility, and I just got rained down upon about how it's all Calhoun's players. Yo, I don't care whose players it are. Like, to do this at 41, had never been a college coach before, a head coach. You know, he had a little bit of experience there. It's incredible. And Borzell and I, you know,
the players love playing for him too.
They, like, even last year
when they couldn't make the tournament, like, you could tell that the players just love playing with him, like, they love playing for him. And it just seems that there's the relationship between him and the players is just, it's, you know, it's awesome. It's just, they seem to be just generally happy. I mean, even like, you don't see guys sulking around, stuff like that. It seems like everyone just loves playing for him.
Yeah, the quote of the weekend. I wasn't around when he said it, but I saw it passed along. You know, someone had talked about last year when they couldn't go, and he said, yeah, we were banned from the tournament. We were banned from coming here, and he was referencing the Garden for the Big East tournament when UConn was leaving the conference. But he's like, but they weren't banned from loving each other. They weren't banned from encouraging each other. Like, just kind of like basic coach boiler speak. But you know what? With Kevin Ollie, like, they freaking buy in 100%, and it's just it's really – and when you're around him, like, GP, I don't know how much you've been around Ollie. I know you've seen him a little bit, but sure. It is impossible not to be – like, that dude will never fail on a job interview, no matter what he does. His verve is ridiculous.
No, he's impressive. And I honestly, like, last year, I think they only won 20 games. They finished, like, tied for seventh in the Big East or whatever. But the idea that he had those kids playing when they had nothing to play for.
Right.
Like, to me, that was the – I don't want to say it was the first impressive thing about him, because I just think the way he carries himself is impressive in general. But to, you know, ask any coach, when you've got nothing to play for, like, that's why you see these reasonably talented teams go to the NIT and then just get their asses beat, because they don't care. Yeah. You know, they don't play. They feel like they have nothing to play for. Well, Connecticut quite literally had nothing to play for last year, and yet he got them – I don't want to say from start to finish, because they did lose 10 games and 8 in the Big East, but he got them to compete. You know, he got them to buy in. He got them to work, even though there wasn't something at the end of the tunnel, so to speak. And so,
and then, I mean, they didn't even know they were going to be playing for the same coach next year, you know, after last, you know, because he wasn't going to have the permanent job. He was still in
right. It was, GP, you touched on that. I mean, it was, I remember you writing the column. I mean, it was kind of out there for way too long. It was like, what is going on here? Like, he seems like he's got to be the guy. Why aren't they finally just locking him in?
Yeah, that was my thing. I was just like, commit to him. Even if it's just for the perception that you're committing to him, just do it. Like, you know, sometimes people get so caught up on, well, like, well, then what if it doesn't work out? Well, then do what you do every other time it doesn't work out. Just pay the guy to go away. Like, that's what college athletics is built on, for better or worse. I mean, that's the reality of this whole deal. So I never understood the hesitation, but whatever. You know, it's March 30th, and they're going to the Final Four, so good for them. Florida, you know, is the opponent, and this is a rematch. It's interesting that I said this on a radio show earlier. Their resume, Florida's resume, was so awesome on Selection Sunday that they were the number one overall seed. And now the resume looks even better today. I mean, the only two losses they had all year were to two teams that have joined them in the Final Four, you know? And so they have an opportunity to, at least in theory, possibly avenge most of those losses, if that's probably the wrong verb, but whatever. They could knock out Connecticut, and then, you know, if Wisconsin get past Kentucky, knock out Wisconsin, and then be able to say that they did beat at least everybody on their schedule. It would be wild. I saw Florida up close this weekend. I'd seen them earlier in the year, but they were in Memphis with me. They handled UCLA. They handled Dayton. I don't think they played brilliantly or perfectly, but they just were never seriously threatened. And I don't even care what the score was. At any point in the game, there might have been a point in the game where they were only up three with 6 minutes. They were never losing. I mean, it just be, if you watch the games, it's just like you never got the sense that they were losing. Like, there were many times watching Michigan, Kentucky today, I was like, okay, that team's losing. Okay, that team's losing. Or even Connecticut, Michigan State, like, that team's losing. Okay, now this team's losing. There was never a moment where you flip-flopped on Florida. And it was just so businesslike. They are so in control of everything, and they don't have to play well to beat you because you can't score on them. I mean, people really have a hard time scoring on them. They were up 10 at the half. Up 14 at the half against Dayton, only had 5 field goals the rest of the game, and still won by 10. Like, it's just ridiculous.
It feels like they don't. I mean, they're like not that they're just going through the motions, but they're just so comfortable in what they do, and it's like you said, like, you never think they're gonna lose. They just seem so kind of, they're not stressed out there. They're just going up the court. They're running an offense. They're getting a basket, and they're just not letting the other team score. It's just. Like, I mean, they're kind of just doing what they do. They're not doing anything special. And like you said, they don't look like they were dominating teams.
No.
But at the end of the day, they're winning by double digits without doing anything all that great. And it's just impressive that, like, every team has to play a perfect game to win, and they just have to go out there and you never really think they're going to lose.
Go ahead.
I was just going to give – listen, Borzello's not going to pat himself on the back, but I'm going to give him some props here because he's had Florida since last summer, basically, to be this good. Now, maybe not two loss good, but at number one seed, make the Final Four good. So, credit to you, dude. I mean, you've kind of seen
bro.
This.
Thanks, bro. Not at all, man.
I talked to Archie Miller about him yesterday, and honestly, like, I don't feel like I'm telling secrets, Thursday night, Dayton played the early game, right? And so they handled Stanford. And I was with that staff a little bit, like, between games. And I'm not saying they were like, but they knew, like, if we play UCLA, we got, like, we can maybe catch them, Because, like, UCLA, as good as they were, at moments this year, they were also the same team that got blown out by Washington State, like, a couple of weeks ago. Like, they had something on their resume that suggested an inferior team could catch them. Florida didn't. So as soon as Florida won, the Dayton staff, they knew what they were up against, and that they were going to have to play perfectly and have Florida not play well. And Florida didn't play well, but they didn't play perfectly, and that probably had a lot to do with Florida, and so you get what you get. I mean, again, that's a fascinating stat. They were up 14 at the half, only scored 5 field goals in the final 20 minutes, and still won by 10. I mean, like, the game was never closer than 8 in the second half. They were never threatened, even though they couldn't score, and that's because Dayton couldn't score. So when I talked to Archie about it after the game, he was like, listen, what are you going to do? We got here, we took a shot. They're really, really good. But he was just blown away by how good they are defensively and how good Wilbekin is. Like, could not say enough nice things about Wilbekin. And it's interesting, when you look at Shabazz's stat lines, like, they jump off the page typically. It's like, whoa, it's like 28 points. And
you know he's having a good game. He's having 25, 28, 30 points.
Like, you don't need to watch it. You can just look at the box score and go, he's filling it up. Like, he's doing everything. With Wilbekin, like, the box scores don't look like that. But when you watch the game, and this is the point, Archie, like, he controls everything. Like, when they need a big shot, he takes it, he makes it, he makes them around the basket, he makes them, 22 feet from the basket. He's not as flashy. He's not as flashy as Shabazz. If maybe because nobody is, but he's the same kind of killer, that Shabazz is. Yeah. Like, he's got that same thing in him, and so to see those guys go again, go round two. It's going to be a lot of fun. It's the undercard game because, let's be honest, if you've got an opportunity to put Kentucky in primetime, you put Kentucky in primetime. But Wilbekin, Napier round two, going to be a lot of fun.
And to note, I mean, I was at that game, really good game, but you'll hear plenty. Baz hit the winner and Wilbekin left the game with 3 minutes to go with an ankle injury.
Right.
So that was, one, the shot that he got, it was a second chance kind of lucky shot for Shabazz. And really, truly, Florida is just so close to being a one loss team. It's ridiculous how he hit that shot, but now you'll have Wilbekin fully healthy and, Yeah, undeniably, that's a cool storyline. Florida has not lost since it went to Connecticut and fell at the buzzer to the best player in the tournament, and now we get a cool rematch. We that almost never happens.
Remember, and they'll have a rematch with whoever they play in the title game.
And then, of course, right.
Borzello just breezing past UConn's chances there. Okay, I'm saying they've
played five games against the Final Four teams.
Yeah, yeah, you're just saying that Florida's going to win, and I know we're all on the same page there.
Okay, so the other game, of course, will be Kentucky and Wisconsin. Kentucky opened as, I think, a 2.5-point favorite, even though they're the 8 seed and Wisconsin's the 2 seed, which shows you – and I don't want to say it shows you what seeds mean, because the seed, like, I think, I don't know if Kentucky should have been an 8 or a 7, but they were basically seeded the right way. It's funny how, you know, when they start playing well, people go, I can't believe they were an 8 seed. I can totally believe they're an 8 seed, given the way the committee is instructed to seed teams based on the stuff that you're supposed to care about. Then, yeah, they should, I mean, maybe an 8, okay, we could argue, okay, they should have been a 7 or an 8, you know, but that's about where they were supposed to be. So, But what they accomplished or didn't accomplish in November, December, January has nothing to do with the way they're playing right now. And I'll be honest. Like, listen, I had this team ranked number one in the preseason for all the same reasons everybody else did. I don't want to say I gave up on them, but I just generally didn't think that they would be able to flip the switch and become the team that I thought they were going to be this late in the season. And yet, here they are. And you know, I know that John Calipari can be a punching bag for riders and opposing fans, because honestly, he invites a lot of it on himself. But the job he's done with this team to turn this around, to get them to work together in a way that through about 4 months, it didn't look like they were going to, is really a remarkable coaching job. And you can't do anything but tip your hat to the guy.
What is he doing tonight, John Calipari? He's got to feel, like, in his private moments, he must feel so vindicated by winning 4 games, getting to his 3rd Final Four in 4 years. Ridiculous. You know, I do not and will not say Kentucky is playing with house money, because it's Kentucky, and when you have that talent, you're never playing with house money.
And they're the favorite.
Exactly, and they're the favorite, but there is this weird juxtaposition between what UK had become and how it so clearly had underachieved, and now how it's parlayed, just showing utter resolve. And Borzello had mentioned, as we were getting ready to pack up and leave at MSG, Kentucky's played in 3 of the 5 best tournament games we've had, and to have gotten through what it got through, I mean, I still think UK, which I'll say it was the best game of the tournament, but UK Louisville was ridiculously good, and Kentucky Michigan was obviously so thrilling, and to have gotten through those teams, Final Four teams from a year ago, and all really worthy teams of making a Final Four this year, it speaks to what this team's become. And they did it again today, by the way, without Cauley Stein, who's, you know, going to be drafted eventually at some point. So, dude, hats off to Kentucky. And I will say this, like, the Final Four is so much more interesting with them in it. Michigan.
Of course it is.
Michigan, no offense.
I had some Kentucky fans. They were like, oh, Parrish, you're probably crying. I'm like, why am I, like, Kentucky being there is good for me. Like, you know, it's like.
People are going to click on our stories.
It's great. Like, it's great. Like, people, like, I don't know. Like, I think people sometimes think we care about stuff that we don't actually care about, or that we, you know, or don't care about things that we actually do. Like, I love stories, and there's no better story than John Calipari and these five, the new Fab Five. By the way, they played 5 games. They played the 5 freshmen have started more games now than the Fab Five actually did. You know, like,
oh, really?
Oh yeah, like that. I think the number was 15.
Fun fact.
Yeah, fun fact, right? And so they are the Fab Five, and they have, you know, or the new Fab Five, and they have an opportunity to do something that the Fab Five actually never did, which is win a national championship. And it is, you know, though this is the time where everybody focuses on, hey, the talent finally came together, and Julius Randle's a beast, and all of that stuff. The truth is, yes, a lot of it's that, but some of it is also, and this happens almost every year, that somebody shoots their way, uncharacteristically shoots their way to a Final Four. BCU did it in 2011. Like, they just start, you know, they started shoot. They were a bad shooting three-point shooting team, and suddenly they're shooting three-pointers at a remarkable rate, and that is how they got. You know, listen, Havoc's great, Shock is wonderful. How BCU got to the Final Four, that was three-point shooting in an uncharacteristic way. Well, here's Kentucky. You know, they, you know, in the wins over Wichita State and Michigan, they're shooting like 52% from 3-point range. Like that, like that's, yeah. In the SEC this year, 18-game schedule, they shot 31.9%. In those two wins against Wichita and Michigan, which were, by the way, a 2-point win and a 3-point win, they've shot 51.7% from 3-point range. So how has Kentucky got to the Final Four? John's done a great job. Julius Randle is awesome. The Harrisons have been tremendous. You know, Aaron hitting that big shot. Also, they've shot the ball in a way that they really haven't shot the ball all year long. And so sometimes it really does just come down to something like that. You start making shots that you haven't normally made at the time where you can benefit most from it.
That Andrew Harrison shot, man.
Jeez. Oh, it's just terrific. And, you know, like, that's the thing. Like, you know, Kentucky fans, when I tweeted that stat earlier about, you know, in the Michigan and Wichita State games, they've combined to shoot, again, 52% from three-point range. They were like, yeah, but they're taking better shots. I'm like, that Aaron Harrison shot wasn't a better shot.
It was a hand in his face from, like, 4 or 3 feet.
Yeah.
Is that who he was on the AAU scene, though, just in terms of taking shots like that, no matter if they were good or...
I mean, both him and his brother were. I mean, they both were killers. Aaron was always the better shooter. Andrew would just kind of go past his guy and finish at the rim. But, I mean, they were both, you know, never afraid of taking a big shot or never shied away from taking a big shot.
Did I ever tell you guys, I can't remember if I used it on the podcast or not, but I've told this story somewhere. I was talking to somebody who's known those kids, the Harrisons, like forever, right? And they said they talked to the... to the Harrison's father at one point when they were really – because apparently, like, Bordell, you'll know this better than I. They've been big forever. Is that true?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So when they were, like, 14 years old, they were obviously bigger than everybody, all of the 14-year-olds. So the dad wanted them to always play their age. Did they always play their age?
Yeah, I mean, they didn't play 17 until they were going into their senior year, if I'm not mistaken.
Okay, so this makes sense then. So somebody I know advised the dad to have them play up, and the rationale was it's fairly simple to understand. He said you're going to get to a point in your life, like, if you think these kids are pros or high major guys, and this is a conversation somebody I know had with the dad when the kids were like 14. He said at some point you're going to be the same size as the people you're playing against. Like it's not now, but at some point it'll be college, it'll be the NBA, wherever you think you're going to look up and be playing people your same size at your same position. So prepare for that now. So forget what age they are. Go find the age where there's people their own size and have them play that age, whatever that age is. If it's 17s, and they're only 14, go play 17s. You need to get used to playing against people your own size. Forget whatever age, your own size, because when you drive on somebody on people who are, you know, smaller than you, well, then everything that's supposed to be a runner is actually a layup, and everything that's supposed to be a floater is that you just learn how to you don't learn how to play the right way. Like, you dunk everything instead of use creative, stuff around the rim. You don't need to be playing against people that are 4 inches shorter than you, because one day you're going to get to a point where you're not playing against people 4 inches shorter than you, and you're not going to know how to play. And so this person said, so why are they struggling this year? Besides the fact that neither one's a true point guard and all that stuff, and maybe they don't, maybe they've got some bad whatever going. They never played against people their own size. They are learning for the first, like, the way this guy said was, he said, you got to, like, most basketball players, like, if you're 7, you play against people your own size. And you're 9, you play. These kids, for the first time in their entire lives, are playing against people their own size, and they've had trouble adjusting to it. And so they might figure it out, but it's taken some time. And I thought that was a really interesting observation that the first time they ever played against people their own size was when they got to Kentucky. And so maybe that's among the reasons, maybe not the reason, but among the reasons it's been a slow transition. But man, they're playing right now. They're playing right now. You know, they've been good.
They've been really good, and I think there might actually be something to that. You know, Kyle Anderson used to play way up. I think it was more because of skill level or whatever, but I think that kind of spoke to why he was so good and adjusted.
I first saw Kyle Anderson when he was in eighth grade. He was playing with either 16s or 17s.
Right.
He was tall then.
Yeah, no, exactly. Yeah, I mean, so there's something
6'9", but yeah, he was tall.
I just thought that was interesting. I had never had somebody put it that way. Like, you need to learn to play against people your own size, because one day you're going to have to play against people your own size. And the Harrisons are you know, two of the very few examples of kids who enter college without ever probably playing people consistently their own size, unless you think there's like a bunch of 6'5" guards playing high school basketball against them every night in Texas, you know.
And now they're not going to have that to the same degree against Wisconsin, which I absolutely love this game. Cause they got smaller guards. I mean, Brustin and Gosser are solid, but they're not nearly, they don't have the physicality at all, but Wisconsin's like, fun. First of all, just a quick side note. I tweeted out, but I got to say the stat. Like, if you're an Arizona basketball fan, it is. It has been
brutal.
GP, I saw that you. How did you? By the way, you tweeted. You retweeted it like 2 hours after I had tweeted. Did someone else come across it?
I don't know how I saw it. I just remember seeing it and going, "Wow!" Like, yeah. that is just.
Yeah,
awful.
I know. Well, Arizona's been obviously nationally relevant for forever. And
Sean Miller's done has been, you know, heartbroken. He's been to the second weekend of the tournament 5 of the last 7 years.
Exactly, dude. I mean,
I didn't realize that.
He's a great coach, and unfortunately, now it was basically, you could have made the argument, him or Bo Ryan, best coach never to make a Final Four at the D1 level. Bo's obviously done so much at the D3 level, but so now Sean's going to have to carry that, and it's kind of like a compliment, but at the same time, like, this tournament is such a beast. It's not an indictment on your ability as a coach. But if you're an Arizona fan, you haven't made the Final Four since 2001, and the past 4 times you've got there, your team has lost by no more than 3, and the average is by 1.8 points, and 2 of those games have gone to overtime, and one of them is probably the worst collapse in tournament history, that 0-5 game against what was an awesome Illinois team. So it's just, for Arizona, which was so good this year, and really, I mean, that Wisconsin, there have been so many ridiculous games. Every year I list the 10 best games of the tournament. I think I might expand it to 15, because it's been unreal how many games. It's not just like, we haven't had a lot of buzzer beaters, but we've had so many games, guys, where it's been 20-30 minute experiences. In UK Wichita State, it was a 2-hour experience of like riveting basketball, just
what was,
you know,
that
push and pull.
That Wisconsin Arizona stat, somebody tweeted it, the last 18 minutes nobody had more than a 3-point lead or something.
Yes,
like that.
Dave Repson from the Big Ten Network. The final 18 minutes, no one led by more than 3 points. It was just kind of, it was tense the whole way. And it was, so just, you know, props to Zona. You know, we get to a Final Four and we look back and these teams are all gone. But like, credit to Louisville on an amazing season. It totally sucks that Russ Smith is out of college basketball. And props to Zona for really being such an impressive club all year. But Wisconsin's damn good, and the offense is fantastic. And I can't wait for them. For Frank the Tank, That dude's ridiculous.
He's a stud, man.
He is a stud. And I was talking with some Michigan State coaches, and they were just kind of like, he might be good enough if he wants. If he has like a really good game against Kentucky and those bigs, like, he's a junior. His stock, his NBA stock is now existent, whereas the beginning of the year, not even close. So to see him play, step out, he's got incredible post moves. Dude, he's now Baz is the best, but I think I like watching Kaminsky more than anyone in this Final Four.
And then of course you get Bo Ryan also in the Final Four for the first time. And yeah, listen, I tell you, I like stories. Like, what's better than Bo Ryan in the Final Four? This is a guy who has been one of the consistently great college basketball coaches for many, many years. And yet, you know, people will always pick you apart for something, right? And with Bo, it was, yeah, but, you know, his teams aren't built to go to a Final Four. You know, they can, you know, and this and that. And here they are, right? You know, I remember Billy Donovan talking about it after he won his first national championship, because the 5 years prior, he had been eliminated in the opening weekend of the NCAA tournament. And he said, listen, my philosophy has always been just get in here. And then, you know, just keep knocking on the door. And at some point, you're just going to break through. You just will. If you get here enough, you're just going to break through. You won't even know how you did it or why you did it or what happened or if you were supposed to. You just keep knocking on the door over and over again. At some point, you'll get through. And I guess I always assumed that would happen with Bo. But it's fine. It's nice that it's finally happened, because, you know, listen, he's a bazillionaire, successful coach. His problems are smaller than most people's problems. But it must suck to be awesome at your job and still have people, like, nitpick you to death. You know, still have people say, yeah, but you can't do this. And so now, at the very least, like, that's off the table for him. And then you know what? You know who will get it off the table next? Sean Miller will be the one to get it off the table next. And so it's just really, I like the idea of having Bo Ryan in the first Final Four. I like, listen, this is not the Final Four I predicted. I wrote about this earlier, but this is a pretty awesome Final Four. I mean, you got star power, you know, Hall of Fame coaches, you know, Kentucky, Bo Ryan for the first time. Like, I'm not always intrigued by the Final Four. I really like this one.
There's a ton of storylines. Yeah,
yes.
No question.
Yeah. We will not have, yeah, when we kind of discuss going forward here what we want to think we want to write about, there's going to be more than enough to go around between the coaches alone, the players, the, you know, we touched on it so much here already with everything. So, no, when you look at the fact that, and John Gassaway tweeted it out, this is actually statistically, if you average the seeding, it's the fourth highest average seed in modern tournament history. That normally, like, the other ones were 2011, which UConn won, and that was, you know, that was when VCU made it, and that was like, that was an interesting one, but it ended up being not that great of a Final Four. 2000, which of course had, you know, UNC and Wisconsin make it as eight seeds, that was Izzo's only title, but that wasn't a great Final Four. And then 06, when Florida won its first of the two, that also wasn't a great Final Four. I mean, maybe going in, those stories would have been interesting, but I think we've got a decent chance at good games no matter what. I mean, Wisconsin, with the way they play, it's I just can't see that game being too wide of a margin either way. Florida obviously could outpace UConn, but I'm not going to count out Shabazz with what he's done. I think that will at least be intriguing, and then we talked about what will happen if Florida gets to the title game.
All right, remember, you listen to the Island College Basketball Podcast brought to you by Squarespace, where you can easily create your own professional website or online portfolio. You know, Squarespace is constantly improving its platform with new features, new designs, and even better support. They got beautiful designs for you to start with, and all of the style options you need to create a unique website for you or your business. It's easy to use, but they got amazing support. It's available 24/7, and all starts at just $8 a month. And you can start a free trial with no credit card required, which means you can start building your own website today. When you decide to sign up, remember, use the offer code FUN to get 10% off and to show your support for the Eye on College Basketball Podcast. All right, let's wrap this up with three predictions brought to you by Squarespace. And I'll have one. You have one, Norlanda. Borzello, you can go first. Saturday semifinals. Predict the winners for us and give us your new national champion.
I'll go with Florida beating Connecticut, and I'll go with Kentucky beating Wisconsin to face off for the fourth time this season. I think it's only happened once before. I think somebody tweeted that it was Michigan State and Wisconsin played four times, or Duke Maryland, somebody like that played four times.
Duke Maryland is definitely one of them.
Memphis Cincinnati did.
Really? All right, so yeah. Maybe it's happened more than once.
Nick Van Exel killed them dudes like four straight times in a row. I used to have nightmares growing up in Memphis. Like, I had nightmares about Nick Van Exel. He, how about this? So, like, I think Van Exel, when the Grizzlies moved to Memphis, before they played in FedEx Forum, they played in the Pyramid. I did not witness this, but somebody who worked at the Pyramid told me about it. So Van Exel's like with the Nuggets or somebody. And he comes in to play the Grizzlies. Like, first year the Grizzlies are in Memphis, second year, whatever. And he walks in the Pyramid, and he looks up in the rafters, and he goes, "Man, I'm surprised they don't have my number retired in this place." He used to straight kill them, man. They beat them twice in the regular season, and then in the conference tournament final, and then in the Elite Eight. So I don't know if it's happened other than that, but I know right, that, so
happened,
that's one time.
It's happened a bunch of times. Right. I think those teams will meet in the title game. I think Florida's going to win. For the fourth time, I just think that, you know, they're the most complete team in the country. I think they've been the best team in the country for a while, and I just think they match up well with Kentucky, and I think that's where Kentucky is. You know, it's funny to say this, but their magical run through the tournament ends.
Okay, EGP. I will take Florida over UConn in a game that I hope is close, but I think the Gators kind of just make UConn submit in the way that Florida does so well. I think it will be somewhere in an 8-10 margin, with the game kind of being almost like, you know, what you said.
So like every one of Florida's games ever?
Yeah, like what he said with Dayton. Like, we watched that game, and while for certain points it was fun and interesting, you never, ever thought Florida wasn't in control. I'm expecting that with Florida and UConn here, because that UConn 2011 team is still, to me, is you know, and no offense to Husky fans, it just is one of the worst title winning teams. Like, they were good, they won the title.
Oh my God, the worst ever.
Exactly. So, and I don't think this UConn team is as good as that one. So I think Florida is going to win. And then I have Wisconsin beating Kentucky because of Frank the Tank and because of I think Bo will have a lot of time to prepare there. Kentucky clearly has more talent. I'm also thinking Cauley Stein won't play. He was on crutches. I know he's going to try, so it's kind
I can't imagine. Please.
Yeah, I don't think he is. So I will take Wisconsin there in a good game, though. I think it'll be a ton of fun because there's two totally, totally different styles, and I think that's going to be a ball to watch. And then why not? I will take Bo Ryan to win this thing. I will take Bo Ryan to do it. That would be tremendous. I'm just kind of thinking off the top of my head. I don't know how many other coaches, and I wouldn't might be one of them, but would have earned their first national title at an older date. I might have to start looking that up. But
look at you comparing Bo Ryan to John Wooden.
Look at you.
No, but you know what I'm saying, though.
Only three people. Wooden, Bo Ryan, and Rick Bird. That's
Ricky Bird, yeah.
There you go. That's your Mount Rushmore three people.
Yeah, Mount Rushmore three people. Yeah.
Yeah, you got to add one. You'll find another one.
And just put Rick Bird up there twice. Have him bookend it.
I'll go Badgers over Gators in a fairly good and entertaining.
I'll go Florida and Kentucky, all SEC final, and then Florida beating Kentucky. We could talk about it at length later on in the week.
SEC is the best conference in the country.
Which, God, I just had to remind people. Like, unless you're going to tell me the Eastern Conference is awesome when the Heat win the national world championship at the NBA level, then shut up. You know what this means? Let's be very clear what this means. Having two SEC teams in the Final Four. You know what it means? It means out of a 14-team league, two of them were really awesome. One of them's been awesome all year, and one of them started playing really, really well in this tournament. And here's what – I'll take it a step further. It also means Tennessee was closer to its KenPom rating than it was his actual resume all year long. And that's it. That's what it means. It doesn't mean anything more than that. It doesn't, just because, Dan Walken, our buddy from USA Today, tweeted this earlier, just because Florida State and Clemson both won BCS bowls doesn't mean that the ACC was awesome in football this year. That's not what it means. It means what it means. And if you try to draw any sort of larger conclusion from it, it's an exercise in silliness.
That's SEC fan, though, man. Like, the SEC, and obviously in football more than anything, but they love latching on to the entire conference once we get time to the postseason and kind of taking credit as a whole. It's a weird thing. I don't think it really happens with any other conference.
It's just weird. It's also, like, rooted in just – it's just dumb. Like, I get aggravated by idiocy.
GP, I know we've talked about this.
I've heard that
podcast like all year.
I mean, I just get so angry when people are just dumb. I don't mind people being like I like it. Like it, like if somebody wanted to sit down now and have like a conversation, like okay, so you gave up on this Kentucky team, why? And let's talk it out because that's actually like not that's actually real. Like I didn't think they were going to be able to flip a switch and do this. So like if that were the criticism I was hearing from Kentucky fans now, I'd be like, yeah, let's talk about that because I think that's really interesting because I didn't think this team was going to be able to turn it around. I didn't think the Harrisons I just didn't think the pieces fit well together. Like, listen, all these podcasts are, they're easily available. You can go back and hear every word I've ever said. I'm not trying to use revisionist history. So to me, if you want to use what's happened in this tournament to address that, like, let's talk about that. But when you try to pretend that somehow it means the SEC was underrated or that we were all wrong about the SEC or that KenPom or Sagarin or the RPI was all wrong, that's just dumb because it's untrue. It doesn't, that Florida's in the national championship game doesn't mean Auburn was better than we thought. Like, I don't know why people can't understand that. Why can't people understand that?
I can't help you.
We'll ask around. We'll discuss this again Thursday.
Yeah, okay. Listen, spend the next few days
making phone calls,
trying to figure out why people can't grasp that. I have one of my neighbors, bless his heart, he's like a nice guy, but he's an Ole Miss graduate. And I like, let me find my phone. This guy, like he could not.
He's going to the phone.
Yeah. Okay. So like he's my neighbor, right? I won't use his name, but he like lives a couple down houses from me. And he doesn't even care about basketball. So I don't even know what he's watching it for. But he says, okay, so what time the game in? Like what time did that Kentucky game in?
What, today?
Yeah.
7-ish?
Yeah, okay. Yeah, so at 7:15, like it says 7:17. This is when I get the text message. Yep, SEC sucks at basketball. Three Sweet 16 teams and two Final Four teams, but we would have had three teams in a Final Four of football, so we suck at basketball.
Parrish has his neighbors trolling him.
I'm like, dude, you don't think I'm getting enough of this on Twitter? Like, why do I have to listen to it from you? And so then I respond, the SEC does suck at basketball.
It does. There's no question.
Suggesting otherwise is dumb and simple-minded. He said, oh, yeah? Well, does any other league have two teams in the Final Four? Just saying. I hate it when people say just saying. It drives me crazy. So I said, no. I understand what you're just saying. It's the same thing a lot of dumb people are saying. I've heard it all before. And then he says, it's a fact! Exclamation mark.
Fact, okay.
What's dumb about the fact that we have half of the Final Four? SEC.
The ACC is half the NIT.
This is what I'm dealing with. And I just, and like, you know what? Like that guy I just read those, he's a college-educated, smart, wealthy individual and could not be dumber when it comes to this. Drives me crazy. So I want you guys to spend the next 2 days figuring out why it is fans of SEC schools have somehow concluded from Florida and Kentucky's success that the SEC is great or even good at basketball. And I'm if you can bring me back an answer that
this is a straight up homework assignment from Parrish.
Yeah,
right now.
Yeah. If you bring me back an answer, let me know. Just let me know if you can bring me back an answer that includes anything other than the phrase you know what? Sometimes people are just dumb. If you can come up with something else, I'll listen to it. Right?
Just saying.
I'm just worried that that's what we're going to be dealing with is hey, people are just dumb. But seriously, congratulations to the SEC though. I mean, it is. In fairness, if I were a dumb fan, I would be screaming the same thing.
Okay. There you go.
There you go. All right. We've kept you long enough. I really do appreciate
I have nothing
you
else to add,
being here at CBSSports.com. Listen to the podcast, read what we write, interacting with us on Twitter. Remember, you can subscribe to the Eye on College Basketball podcast on iTunes. It's the best way to get the latest edition as quickly as possible. So do that, and we will talk to you live from Dallas or recorded from Dallas.
But yes, together.
All together a little later on this week.
Sitting in our hotel room together.
Till then.
Why'd you have to make it weird, Borzella?
Yeah, why'd you have to make it weird?
Because I wanted to.
All right. Hey.
Hey.
Take care
of yourselves.
Take care of yourselves.